You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 13th of August 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it's Thursday today, and that means we have geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us from rustjournal.org. Matt, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Well, you know, since this Belarus thing hit, you know, my phone's been ringing off the hook. I'm at a point now where I don't need a secretary. I need backup dancers. That's really my big requirement now.
Well, that would keep you entertained as well, wouldn't it? It'd be more entertaining than the cats, I should imagine. Backup dancers. Maybe you could get some go-go dancers in there as well. Well, yes, we are going to be talking about Belarus today and what's going on in Minsk. And before we get into that, I mean, really, I have to say, what the hell do they think they are playing at? I've been looking at these so-called protests, and I have yet to see a non-white face in there. I mean, this country just looks like paradise to people in the West. I mean, do they have any idea what is going on in the West, what is going on in America, in Europe at the moment? And they don't have to deal with any of that. They've got a whiteopia there. It's pretty much 100% white, and yet they think they've got some kind of reason to get up there and protest. It's absolutely disgusting to see what is going on there. Matt, how come these Belarusians don't realize how lucky they are? I mean, what is it? Is it the grass is always greener? I mean, just what is it that they don't realize that they have life so lucky? What is it? Just tell me before we get into this.
Well, you know, the Soros paycheck is pretty substantial. They're going to unionize, maybe even get overtime. So there's a lot going on in their lives, too. So that really is the impetus for a lot of this. And it's just exciting.
They must be so, so selfish to not realize, you know, just how precious it is what they actually have there. I mean, just unbelievable that they would think that they had anything legitimate to protest about when they're pretty much one of the only countries left that are still 100% white. Well, let's look into the details of this anyway. I know you've done lots of podcasts on Belarus before, and it's pretty much a specialist subject of yours, Matt. And the first quote that we've got here is some independent election predictions by a Syahai Tikhanovsky and Svetlana Tikhanovskaya. And they're talking about, these are the two actual opponents to Lukashenko.
Yes.
Here.
That's it. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That was just what's coming here is from an analytical center in Russia and Ukraine. That's the husband and wife team that allegedly won this election.
Oh, right. Okay. So husband and wife are standing in opposition to him. And this is dated from August the 2nd. So it's from 11 days ago. And it says a total of 89.5% of the population is planning to vote at the presidential elections. More than half of Belarusians, 61.4%, have a positive attitude to the possibility of early voting. This is evidenced by the data of the sociological survey of the electoral sentiments and preferences of citizens conducted by the ECOOM Analytical Center. For the period of the poll, the electoral preferences of citizens in respect of presidential candidates were distributed as follows. Alexander Lukashenko is supported by over 72% of Belarusians. The ratings of the others do not exceed 10% in total. 10.9% found it difficult to answer. A little over 3% did not want to answer. 3.7% are against all candidates. At the same time, the level of confidence in the current president, which includes not only the electoral rating but also an assessment of the socio-economic policy of the head of state, the effectiveness of his decisions, is 78.1%. From the sources of information about the election campaign, television is the most trusted by the population. The second place is occupied by the internet media. And then comes the social environment, which includes friends, acquaintances, and relatives. Matt, that's incredible that they actually view the television as being more trustworthy than the internet. I mean, they must have access to the internet. They must be able to see what is on there, and yet they believe their television is more trustworthy. I'm just staggered at that. What do you make of it?
Well, you mentioned it already. They live in paradise. there's a state TV. There's also private TV, and they get to compete with one another, and they keep the private investors and the oligarchs honest. But more significantly is the fact that, as I knew already, Lukashenko has roughly a 75% confidence rating of the population. And it makes perfect sense, of course, because liberalism, what everyone else, all these other candidates represent, destroyed Russia and Ukraine in the 90s and even part of the 2000s. Liberalism has absolutely no place in Eastern Europe, according to them. And this proves that the election was perfectly valid, and the numbers are about right. And I want to note that the protests occurred when the polls came out, not when the election happened. The protests began when an exit poll showed Lukashenko with roughly these numbers. The election came later. So this was a way to stop the election. I mean, I've never heard of a riot after an exit poll. But that's exactly what happened. And the election occurred over 4 days, a bit later. So this is a first for me.
I just have to go back to this bit with the television and the internet, because they must be able to see what is on the internet, and yet they have said that their television is more trustworthy. And that means that television must be very, very trustworthy, because otherwise they would have been able to point that out. So this proves that this is trustworthy. This poll was taken, a week before the actual election, and it predicted exactly what we saw in the election. We've got some international observers here. Don't forget, we've been told there were no international observers. That's one of the reasons why the people are rioting. And yet we have an international observer here from Azerbaijan, a Kemran Bayraimov. And he says, all reasonable conditions have been created for independent and free observation on our part. We had a conversation with members of the Precinct Election Commission. I would like to note the high professional level. The answers to all our questions were given. Logistics issues were also at a high level. There is a calm atmosphere. I understand that all these elements will form a good enough solid foundation for the free and fair expression of the will of the Belarusian people. And do Azerbaijan, can they be leaned on at all? Do they owe Lukashenko any favors or anything like that? Is there any way that this could be undermined at all, Matt? Azerbaijan?
Well, Azerbaijan normally is an opponent of both Belarus and Russia. If it was from Armenia, it would be a different story. And he's probably a Muslim, as a lot of them are down there. And he's one of the spokesmen for the CIS. But the CIS is all the republics of the former Soviet Union, many of which are not fond of Moscow. They did have observers. There was observers from all over the place. Sometimes they claimed, well, COVID is going to kill us if we show up there. That was an excuse. But, you know, when you have an enemy of your country saying everything is fine as a spokesman for the observers, then, you know, you have a very good case. I want to note that, you know, back in May when they had to get there, you have to get 100,000 signatures to get on the presidential ballot. Tikhanovskaya barely got 100. She got 104,000. She could barely get the requisite number. No one heard of this woman until the campaign started.
So she could barely actually get the numbers to get on the ballot, and now they're complaining that somehow she should have won. Well, you brought up Russia there, Matt, and one of the things that is really surprising me in all of this is Russia seems to be very, very anti-Belarus as well. They've been having protests in Russia against this election. And if you look at Russia today, they are saying, oh, it's a dictatorship over there, and the people are rising up, and there have been all these election irregularities. And yet it seemed to me that Russia and Belarus were very close together, and they were talking of forming a united monetary policy. They were going to actually have a ruble between them. So what's happening there? Why is Russia suddenly sort of turned turned against Belarusia? Have they turned against Belarusia? And is that all just a storm in a teacup?
Yeah, the state itself is very pro-Belarus, and they've been for a long time. They had a substantial disagreement over oil prices, subsidies, transport, more technical things like that. You have the West trying to wean Belarus away with low prices and things like that. And so there's been a battle. Lukashenko is the type of guy that, even though he loves Russians, they have a defense agreement. Their economies are very, very tightly intertwined. He still is very, very jealous of his independence. And if there's any heavy-handedness by Russia, even if it's unintended, he's going to be upset by that. He's a nationalist in every sense of the word. He's extremely pro-Russian and vice versa. But the oil issue has gotten in the way. But that's just one issue out of thousands. And it just goes to show that RT is very independent, that they're going against the Russian state in this respect. A whole bunch of Russian members of parliament have come out and condemned the color revolution and everything else in the ruling party. So, you know, it's one issue. It was a serious matter, but it's typical Lukashenko. There is no real rift between the two states.
So you pointed out there Lukashenko is very, very pro-sovereignty and he's a nationalist, because if you read the Wikipedia pages, they're trying to say, oh, he's another Soviet commissar. He's a leftover from the Soviet times. So you would challenge that and say that he's not a Soviet commissar then?
Yeah, they have never quite settled on what he is. Some days he's a Nazi. Some days he's a Stalinist. Some days he's a Leninist. Some days he's a fanatical nationalist. It really depends on the day what name he's being called. But no, he's very jealous of his independence, and it has caused problems in the past. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. But that hasn't changed his policy, where defense and economic integration is very clear.
Well, America has clearly shown an interest in Belarus. We've got a quote here from an article in Global Research. They say, just coincidentally, when Russia and Belarus had a disagreement over oil deliveries and contract extension in late 2019 and early 2020, Washington immediately offered alternative supplies. Pompeo said, the United States wants to help Belarus build its own sovereign country. Our energy producers stand ready to deliver 100% of the oil you need at competitive prices. And your nation should not be forced to be dependent on any one partner for your prosperity or for your security. But an oil contract agreement was reached with Moscow and deliveries resumed on January the 4th, 2020. In anticipation of Pompeo's visit to Minsk earlier this year, the Trump administration intimated, this, Belarus, is an era of great power competition and an opportunity to compete for influence. However, whatever secrets the Pompeo visit may have entailed, this looks like a new kind of color revolution in the making, one where the instigators are not visibly Washington and or their NATO-controlled allies, the European Union, but rather a third-party close ally of the US, one whose survival depends on the United States, like Ukraine. It is possible that Ukraine, directed by Washington, infiltrated their secret service people and other troublemakers, possibly with Russian passports, into Belarus, mainly Minsk, before the elections to orchestrate Lukashenko's landslide win, as well as the subsequent civil unrest, which, as of this day, has not abated. And is he sort of intimating there that Poland is playing a part in this ally that's not third-party close ally of the US, one that isn't immediately visible? Is he referring to Poland there, do you think?
He may well be, and the Czech Republic too, which Lukashenko has pointed out as possible sources of this unrest. You know, when you have an unemployment rate of 0.6% and you still have a growing economy, even in this mess, it's a little suspicious as why they'd be, you know, nonstop riots prior to an election, not even over an election, over somebody who didn't even have a platform. The only platform this woman had was to cut ties with Russia. So if that doesn't tell you something right there, yeah, that was her only thing. This woman doesn't know anything about politics. Her husband, the one who was supposed to win, was a YouTube had a YouTube channel with 150,000 subscribers. And so I'm reading this and I'm saying, now he has about 275, but it hasn't been taken down. 150,000 subscribers. If you had that many subscribers on YouTube, which of course is nothing, would your first thought be, I'm going to run for president? You know, he was a minor figure. When the police raided his house, you know, he was involved in a lot of domestic violence. He's been arrested several times. they invaded his mother's house and they found $900,000 American dollars. Well, I'm pretty sure 150,000 subscribers on YouTube can't earn you $150,000 or $900,000. So this guy is a disaster area, and his wife, of course, spends most of her time abroad translating, and of course is fluent in English, which I knew right away. So this whole thing is got, you know, intelligence all over. And don't forget too, you know, Amnesty International, Soros, the big banks, they have their own intelligence services. So this third party can be anyone or a coalition of forces. And again, Ukraine is a colony of the U.S., so it really would be one and the same thing. U.S. used proxy wars in the Cold War constantly, and they're doing it now in Syria. They're doing it in, against Belarus as well. So there's nothing unreasonable about what this guy is saying. But it's just, you know, this couple is so dirty that – and of course, you're not going to hear about this in the Washington Post.
So, I mean, I've been reading about how there's been a suppression of opposition candidates. There's opposition candidates that have been arrested. And what you're saying is, well, that they've been arrested for genuine reasons, not just to silence them.
Well, a few of them. I think Babarka may have been one, Dmitriev another. They lied on their registration forms. They lied about their income. They lied about their assets. You can't have a lot of financing from abroad if you're going to run for president. Well, it shouldn't surprise anyone that a lot of these people do. A lot of these people have assets abroad and are getting financing from abroad, and that's going to get you into trouble. And so this is part of the reason, taking currency out of the country. They're either oligarchs or working for oligarchs, and they're always in trouble. They don't pay enough tax. They don't pay taxes. You know, there's a million ways to go after these guys. They're no threat to Lukashenko. You know, they poll, you know, 3 or 4% at most, as we've already spoken of. So why bother unless they're actually criminals? It's Lukashenko is very popular. He's the most popular politician in Ukraine, believe it or not, by every poll there. So, you know, why these people even collectively are not a threat to Lukashenko with unemployment numbers like that. So he has no reason to do this, or his police, unless, of course, there's a legitimate reason for it.
And of course, there's a very, very big incentive to put down protests after seeing what happened in Ukraine with the Maidan protests. I mean, the minute something like that starts to happen, he is going to want to put it down because he's not going to want to lose his country's sovereignty. He's not going to want it to go the same way as Ukraine went. The next quote appears to be showing that Lukashenko might be pivoting from Russia to Poland. There's little doubt that Lukashenko will win re-election, and it appears increasingly likely that the latest provocation will be exploited as the publicly plausible pretext for accelerating his pro-Western pivot in the aftermath of the vote. He isn't doing this in a geopolitical vacuum, since Poland has made great strides in increasing its attractiveness to Belarus by presenting itself as a credible American-backed counterweight to Russia in recent years. It is primarily done this through the Three Seas Initiative that it leads, which is envisioned to function as the fulfillment of interwar leader Pilsudski's Intermarium. That project refers to his goal of creating a network of allied states between Germany and the then USSR, whose geostrategic whole would be greater than the sum of their parts, thus establishing a new Polish-led pole of power in Europe. I thought the Intermarium years ago was a group of these countries that were trying to provide a bulwark against communism and Bolshevism and degeneracy, and that there was something to do with Catholicism in that. Am I getting it mixed up with something else, Matt?
No, that's about right. This has no relation to that whatsoever. But the Three Seas Initiative is essentially this. There are 17 members of it that, you know, form this axis from north to south. You know, Croatia, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Estonia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, etc. But it really is about money. Their two big projects are a trade highway from Thessaloniki all the way to Lithuania, cutting out Russia, of course, and more importantly, liquefied natural gas infrastructure with Poland, Croatia connecting this pipeline, which would challenge the Nord Stream 2 that we've talked about on this show. So it's an anti-Russian movement. And this is exactly what the U.S. is kind of offering Belarus to be a member of if they move away from Russia, which is never going to happen. But Belarus may try to you know, play one side off against another, like the Third World did during the Cold War. So the Three Seas Initiative is, you know, I really has nothing to do with Pilsudski's idea, but it is a way for American oil companies and natural gas firms to try to challenge Russia directly.
He's playing with fire here if he's going to play one off against the other, I think. America off against Russia. Well, the US supports the Three Seas Initiative because it regards this project as the perfect pro-American wedge between those two great powers, especially considering their recent energy-driven rapprochement through Nord Stream 2. The many smaller and medium-sized states between them in the Central and Eastern European space have historical suspicions of German and Russian intentions. I wonder what could have given them that, thus compelling their governments to naturally seek out a balancing force from abroad. Their societies are also preconditioned by history and the United States' dominant control over the mainstream media narrative to approve of America assuming this role for itself, since they've been led to believe that it is in their shared interests for it to do so. Over the past month, three interconnected developments improved the TSI's attractiveness to Belarus in the current competitive context. So this is being pushed on the mainstream media over there, is it, on the television, this Three Seas Initiative?
To some extent, I think more on the state media than private, although you know that could be reversed depending on the day. State media in Belarus can often be very, very critical of Lukashenko. I think the writer here is exaggerating. Belarus and Russia are too tightly intertwined in every respect for them ever to shift completely over. We've talked about Germany just rejecting the U.S. and U.S. control over Europe over the Nord Stream project. It's kind of the superficial similarity between Russia and Germany, but that's exactly what this is. The U.S. is almost writing Germany off, which is a very dangerous talk about playing with fire. That's all, you know, the U.S. needs is a German, Belarus, and Russian alliance, not to mention China and Iran. But this is pretty much the only quiver they have in their ammunition right now. This is pretty much it. I'm sorry, only arrow in their quiver right now. And so, but I'm not so sure the public opinion thinks that, you know, U.S. Polish dominance is a good thing. I strongly doubt that, unless they're talking about Poland, which is certainly the case. Remember, too, Poland is a national state that is always in trouble with the EU because of its rejection of the migrants, and same thing goes for Hungary. So it gets more complicated that way. They're going to reject American interference, even if they don't like the Russians. The Russians have been the only ones supporting them in these policies. So it gets very complicated, and I think this writer oversimplifies it for that reason.
Well, the West looks like it is definitely wanting some kind of a coup or something to happen there in Belarus. One fact that seems to be ignored by all analysts who have commented on the case so far, however, is the fact that the West has long been interested in carrying out a coup in Belarus. Lukashenko is commonly referred to among Western politicians and academics as the last dictator in Europe, and his policies are highly disapproved of in any Western country. Still, the historical ties between Belarus and Russia are very disturbing to the Western powers, mainly the United States, which sees in the alliance between the two countries a great threat to the Western strategy for Europe. Well, let's just stop there and talk about some of the things that he does that wind up the West, Matt. I mean, he's a COVID dissident, isn't he? He's refused to go along with the COVID scare. He's refused to lock the country down. I was reading Wikipedia and he was trolling the West. He, at one point in the last election, he said that his numbers, actually he had manipulated the election to make his numbers even lower than they actually were to try and put him in line with the rest of Europe who don't have very successful politicians. But he's also anti-homosexuality, I believe. Tell us about some of the good things that he's done that has really upset the West.
Well, this is why he's my favorite living politician. This is why I've been writing on him for so long. He has the family as a central unit of society. He subsidized the Orthodox churches and even the Catholic churches in the West to some extent. He's a firm ethnic nationalist in every respect. He subsidizes families. He has a tactical so-called parasite tax on the oligarchs because they don't have to work very much. That's been manipulated in the Western press, but he loves talking about the parasites that he's trying to get rid of. And having strong executive power is the only way to do that. And his numbers from, like, you know, the last 10 years prove that he's a success. He's a massive success. You know, when he was elected, the first thing he did was pay his debts off real fast and throw the IMF out. You know, unemployment has been low. GDP has been high. They have the lowest infant mortality rate in all of Eastern Europe, certainly in the CIS. Unlike the other states in Eastern Europe, he didn't have – there wasn't really an oligarch faction forming there because he took over in time. And this would drive the West mad. Of course, he has a fully state central bank, which means that his inflation is always under control. Interest rates are maybe 1%. He's doing very, very well. And these pro-family policies, just like you see in Hungary, just make him even more popular and increase the level of economic success. There's a tremendous morale there amongst the common population.
He actually banned unemployment. You know, you're saying he's got unemployment of under 1%. He actually made it against the law to make anybody unemployed, give anyone the sack. Sounds pretty good to me. In 2019, the RAND Corporation, one of the largest Western think tanks, published a document in which it openly defended Belarus's political destabilization through a color revolution or similar means, with the explicit aim of delivering a strategic blow against Russia. Western strategists, American and European, consider it important to neutralize Minsk in order to move forward with a siege agenda against Russia. In the publication, it is suggested that before resorting to more aggressive means, such as a color revolution, the US should offer financial support to Belarus and try to encourage it to break ties with Moscow through diplomatic means, considering that Russia could take the maneuver in Belarus as offensive and organize a harsh response. What do you make of that, Matt?
Well, we'll talk about the actual report here in a minute. But the RAND report also says, and this is only one section of a huge 400-page document, says it's also going to be extremely risky to do this. And one of the reasons they give is that he's so damn popular. You know, it's one thing if you have a third world economy that's struggling with high inflation. It's another thing when you have a very advanced, industrialized first world economy and you're trying to get rid of that guy. So, you know, that's the other thing they say. And they are. This may give Russia the excuse it needs to take more aggressive action against the West, which, as we know, has surrounded Russia, tried to goad it into war. And now that's even worse because the COVID destruction of the economy is forcing the U.S. to really the only way it can get out of this depression is warfare. And that's probably the most terrifying thing of all. But you're also right what you said before. Yes, he's rejected the COVID thing. The minute the lockdown was announced in the West, he organized a victory parade. Encouraging people to go to church. He's condemning the pharmaceutical companies and Western governments for this. He says he had it and recovered, pretty much asymptomatic. So, you know, and the numbers in Belarus have been very low or relatively low. So, you know, he wins no matter what he does, including this election.
He does look like a good guy. I mean, you see the picture of him, you think, yeah, he looks like someone suitable to lead a country. I mean, he looks pretty hard, but fair as well. And, I would hope that he is the way that he looks. Well, let's have a look at the RAND report here, some quotes from that. From a United States policy standpoint, Belarus's unrest might present an opportunity to extend Russia by aiding the opposition, removing a long-standing Russian allied dictator and supporting liberalization. This aid to Lukashenko's opposition could come in a variety of forms, ranging from public declarations of support by United States leaders to more direct financial and organizational assistance helping the opposition parties reach the end state of being a free and democratic Belarus. Alternatively, the United States could adopt precisely the opposite approach and try to leverage the recent unrest to build a closer relationship with Lukashenko's regime through the offers of economic aid. Even if US efforts to boost local opposition to the existing regime in Minsk fail to bring about democratic change, the existence of such a campaign would create apprehensions among Russian leaders who have tended to exaggerate the Western role in other color revolutions and even worry about the prospect of such a movement in their own country. I mean, this is the smoking gun, isn't it? This RAND report, it tells you exactly what's going on there, isn't it, Matt? This is predicting exactly what we're seeing now.
Yeah, not just the color revolution, but also Pompeo's visit and Bolton's visit before. They went from condemning Belarus to going over there and being very good friends, which is what happens when you're wealthy and successful. There's not much they can do about it. As German companies, a lot, and American companies in Germany are ignoring the sanctions because the market is so good in Belarus. And this is not the first time the RAND report has predicted American actions. Yes, it is a smoking gun, and this has occurred in Syria and elsewhere where the RAND report, RAND organization has essentially predicted what the U.S. is going to do.
Well, you've got an interesting final quote here from this RAND report. An independent Institute for Socioeconomic and Political Research survey in 2015 found that 78% of Belarusians believed a better future was not worth people's blood, and 70% did not want a Ukrainian-style revolution. As Belarusian expert Balazs Zharabik summed up, people don't want more freedom. They want more government. They want the better life they used to have. Well, they do have a good life. They are 100% white. I mean, it's just unbelievable to think that they would have a genuine any grievance against a government that has actually kept them white. Matt, have you got any final words you'd like to say on this?
Don't forget, when these people say democratic, they mean liberal. Lukashenko has been voted in legitimately every time. Every office in Belarus is elected. But if they're not liberals, and they're not, they can't be democratic by definition. So that's kind of a sleight of hand there. There is no indicator that would suggest that anyone would have any real problem with the Belarusian economy or way of life, unless, of course, you're being paid from the outside. It doesn't make sense. Not just a racial issue, but every indicator is good over there right now. And certainly relative to the rest of the world, given everything that's happened. They have a very good life. And I'm still trying to find a protest sign that's not in English. But if anyone finds one, send it to me and let me know.
And just to finish up with, I'd just like to point out that Belarus does produce some very, very good music as well. A couple of bands I can think of, Vapor Himis and Drigva, both folk metal bands. So they're not just a good place to live, but they also make good music. So let's hope they get things sorted out soon anyway, and they don't end up looking like Ukraine does. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.